Today, my presentation is the special correlation of factors affecting durum wheat yield in dry land Mediterranean environment. In this case, we're working on southern Italy. Southern is part of Italy, and a field study and simulation approach. In Mediterranean environment, wheat yield variability in rolling landscapes is mainly due to the effect of topography, which affect the spatial distribution of water and distribution, also spatial distribution of both soil chemical and physical properties, and the weather pattern, which are not constant amongst year in Mediterranean environment. In literature review, has been reported that the effect of topography on yield and the interaction between slope, year, and yield can be used for precision farming application by individuating areas of similar response. However, in Mediterranean environment, the unpredictability of rainfall pattern might bias the assessment of such homogeneous areas. To understand the process and the interaction that will affect the outcome of such production system, crop models might be used. Crop models integrate the effect of temporal and multiple stress on growth under different environments, so that it might be possible to use the models along with other techniques to identify such areas for understand which are these areas also that are, or rather than spatially, both spatially and temporally stable for the management for precision farming applications. For this study, the objectives were to assess the spatial variability of yield, identify the responsible factors of yield variability, propose stable management areas through simulation modeling. The study was conducted on durum wheat, cultivar duilio, on a farm in southern East Italy on 6 hectares. The sampling point were 100, but 25 were the main point at the main grid, and then other sampling points were located on 1, 3 and 5 meters from the main point of the grid. In this map we show the DEM of the field with the main points and the soil texture, sand, silt and content for the first 60 centimeters. Some area like the lower part of the field here, there's some point with the highest clay content and low sand content. In the middle portion of the field was an interesting situation because there was very low clay content and a high sand content, and also a presence of limestone. We quantified more than 10% per square meters of stone just on the surface. And also another area with a high stone presence was the upper left portion of the field. Turning to the weather, for both the growing season for 2002 and 2003, the rainfall amount of rainfall was almost similar. However, the distribution of the rainfall for both seasons is different. In 2002, we had consistent rainfall events in April and May. In April, more than 100 millimeters, and in May, around 70 millimeters of rainfall. In 2003, there was an opposite behavior. Most of the rainfall happened in December, January, and February, and April and May had low rainfall pattern. Of course, the different rainfall pattern affected the soil water content for the first 60 centimeters for 2002 and 2003. In the graph, just show the March, April, and May, and we can see that for 2002, because of the highest rainfall in April and May, we had the highest water content, and this will affect the yield for 2002 and 2003. In 2002, the yield ranged between 200 gram to 450 gram per square meters. In 2003, between 40 grams and 340 grams per square meters. However, some areas of the field, like the lower part of the field, showed the highest yield amongst the field. The middle portion, where we had the highest presence of stone and sand, had lowest yield. Also, the upper left portion of the field has the same behavior. In 2003, the yield was lowest than 2002, but still, the lower part of the field has the highest yield, and in the middle part of the field with the high stone content, there was the lowest yield. And the upper right portion of the field has most a stable yield among years. An NDVI map taken for both years at the end of April also remarked that there are some areas with similar response. So, for instance, in 2003, the middle portion of the field and the upper left area, they had a lowest NDVI value, and as we noticed from the yield map, we had the lower yield in those areas, and the same for NDVI taken in 2002. As a further remark of spatially stable areas, the georesistivity map of the field taken from 0 to 200 cm, but in this case I'm showing a map of 100 cm, show that the field might be divided in three homogeneous zones. The blue one, which shows the lowest resistivity, which is the lowest part of the field where we had the highest yield. At zone 2, which is the middle upper portion of the field. And the third areas, in which we had the highest resistivity and correspond with the area of low clay content, high sand content, and highest stone content in field. And by running the SALUS model, which is based on series model and further developed by Basso and Ricci, we used 12 years simulation, we noticed that the three zones, they are special stable, they also are temporarily stable amongst these 12 years simulation. Unfortunately, I had also a principal component analysis, but for technical problems I couldn't put in a presentation. However, the principal component analysis showed that soil water content for 2002 and 2003 was the explained most of the variability in the first component, whereas in the second component, NDVI for both years and GNDVI showed explained most of the variation. Anyway, the landscape position and soil properties affect the spatial variability of final yield. The presence of stone and sand further reduced the grain yield, and the presence of stone and sand, especially in the zone 3, as we saw before from the georesistivity map and from the soil texture map. The rainfall distribution also contributes significantly to both spatial and temporal variability of yield, and crop models, combined then with the spatial understanding of the homogeneous area, might help to identify both temporally and spatial stable areas. And then, finally, I would like to acknowledge many colleagues that advised me or would have some discussion, but the University of Melbourne and the Faculty of Land and Food Resources for the traveling scholarship that awarded me for coming to New Orleans. Thank you.
We're running ahead of schedule, so we have plenty of time for questions.
10 minutes?
No, 5 minutes. Yes.
What is georesistivity?
It's a measure of sort of electrical signals that pass through the soil and measure the.
Do you want to go back to it?
Okay. Anyway, no, don't worry. So we'll just explain. In the area, we saw a blue area. The blue area means that it was at water tab at 1 meter depth. So the water the signal was quite. There was no resistivity for the signal to go down the soil. In the area with a high stone content, we saw a very reddish color, very hard. The signal was very, there was more resistivity for the signal to pass through the profile and show these different values. I mean, we had values, then of course the values we put in software to have this color, otherwise we just had numbers of the resistivity, but to make visually understandable we use different.
So what's the instrument used for
it
measuring?
It was a sort of it's kind of georesistivity meter scored, and it has different wires that at 25 centimeters every 25 centimeters, sorry, we put some needle in the soil, and this the length is variable. We can choose the length, 10 meter, 20 meter, and also we can choose the increase of the signal, 25 centimeter, 5 centimeter. We can take measurement different increments. In this case, we choose 25 centimeter, and we can go down to 2 meters. But I just chose a 1 meter map to show you. Also, I think the EM map might be. We don't have the EM map, but I think in this case, EM map should have done properly almost the same response.
Just the inverse of the map.
Yes.